Hello, wine drinking friends. Strap yourselves in. Today's travels on the wine road are going to take us from Northern California all the way down to Arizona.
Eventually, there was a break in the mesquite trees, and I could see vines like through the mesquite. I was like, oh my gosh, I would have never found this if I hadn't known to go looking for it.
My guest today is Lisa Street of Aridus Wine Company in southeastern Arizona, about an hour east of Tucson. Back in June, I heard from PR and marketing maven Julianne Codmer, wondering if I would cover an Arizona winery. Little did she know, I spent decades there. I also knew I'd be going back to visit family in July. So I accepted her invitation and the interview was set. But then, oddly enough, Lisa received an invitation to pour Aridus wines at the Napa Valley Wine Academy. Just a couple of weeks later, that gave me the chance to meet Lisa ahead of time, prior to our scheduled interview date. Arizona has two official wine appellations in the southern part of the state, Wilcox, which is where Aridus is located, and Sonoyta. There's a third wine-growing region, Midstate, in the Verde Valley, but that has yet to be designated as an official wine region, or AVA. Wilcox is a little over an hour from Tucson, and aside from the winery location, they have a modern, stylish tasting room in Scottsdale, in the Phoenix area. As it turned out, Lisa lives in Tucson and just about a half mile from where we were staying. That was convenient. She's not an Arizona gal. She grew up in Wyoming and first found interest in making wine with her uncle in Western Washington. I asked her how old she was when that occurred.
I guess I would have been about 25, 26 around that time. Maybe 27.
So your decision to become a winemaker was a little bit later in life. It wasn't like when you were 21 or 22.
Oh, yeah. No, I never even thought about it until then. I went back to school to get the winemaking degree. So prior to that, I'd gone to school in Ohio, another great winemaking state, as we all know. So it was never something that I actually thought about. Wine was just a beverage in a bottle, in a store, and I didn't think about how it got there.
But it was that experience in Washington that really kind of turned the page for you, and how close to the coast was it?
It was really working in Washington with my uncle that I kind of finally put all the pieces together. And as far as, it's probably an hour and a half from the coast in Washington, so it's still very much of the Pacific Northwest with that sort of weather. And it's about an hour and a half north of Portland, so it's a lot cooler there even than the Willamette Valley. So he always struggles getting his grapes ripe, but I think in maybe the next 20 years or so, he'll be pretty well situated for the Pinot that he's got planted there.
Right.
Yeah.
So you made that decision. You went down to Oregon State, and by then you knew what you wanted to do.
Yeah. I went there solely with the purpose of getting a degree in enology and viticulture. And when I went down to tour and, you know, chat with the professors, they said they had a 100% job placement rate. So I said to myself, well, yeah, that sounds like perfect. I'll go through, get a degree, and then jump right into the industry.
And you had an internship in Dundee Hills, which is a very respected wine-growing region in Oregon.
Yeah, it was a really interesting internship because the winery that I was at, Alexana Winery, had previously, all of their production had been made at Lynn Penner Ash's facility. She's their consulting winemaker, head winemaker. So they had just finished building this winery, really beautiful, state-of-the-art, and one of my first tasks at that winery was just going through and putting the glycol fittings on everything. They had literally just finished construction. I remember sweeping up concrete dust and wood shavings, and so it was ready just in time for harvest. Huh. Yeah.
You mentioned the placement program. So that next job that you, or the first job that you got, was that part of the placement program?
No. They really understand at Oregon State that in order to go on and get more jobs in the wine industry, it's important to have some experience under your belt. So they built into my schedule a semester where I do an internship.
So that was the experience then.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And they have a really good relationship with E&J Gallo Winery, in particular the research branches. Mm-hmm. Because Oregon State emphasizes really heavily organic chemistry and a lot of the scientific underpinnings of winemaking. So every year, E&J Gallo tends to hire a fair number of folks from Oregon State.
That's what I was wondering when you said the placement program, because I was curious as to why, if you had Washington and Oregon in your background, you would choose to go to E&J Gallo. But what an interesting job you had there.
Yeah. Well, I always knew that I wanted to see and learn as broadly as I could within the wine industry. So going from a small boutique winery to the largest winery in the world really didn't seem like too big of a jump for me, because I knew I wanted something completely different. Yeah, when I was at E&J Gallo, I worked both in specialty wine and with process technology. So in process technology, that was really research-driven. So looking at ways that we could adjust the process of making wine, and also there was a lot of equipment trials, so working with wine technology in order to optimize it and see what different things we could achieve by really pushing the limits of technology that was available to the wine industry. And then in the specialty winemaking team, we were responsible for sparkling wines and flavored beverages. So I spent a good chunk of time making Boone's Farm and Bartles and James, the things that everyone thinks back to high school about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was fun. It was really technical and really strange. And just the process of getting that into a bottle is something that most people don't even really think about when they think about winemaking. But it was a really interesting job to have.
Do they still distribute Boone's Farm and Bartles and James? Because I thought they pulled both of those.
Ah, no, you can still find them. You just have to
look for
them. You have to look at the bottom of the shelf.
Now, I'm not surprised about Boone's Farm, but I thought Bartles and James was long gone.
Ah, no, they still make it. You really do just have to look for it. It's got different packaging than, you know, the old style, but it's still the same shape of bottles and everything.
What an interesting opportunity for winemaker Lisa Streed. Needless to say, working in specialty winemaking for Gallo gave her great experience and insight that she's been able to use since that time. Now, like me, you may be wondering, how did she find a winemaking job in Willcox, Arizona, out among the ranches and mesquite trees? Well, that was my next question.
It's really interesting. I'd always loved Tucson and the desert, and knew that there was a winemaking community out here. I'd visited a number of the wineries, particularly in the Sonoyta area, and thought that at some point I might come out here and consult. I didn't necessarily think there would be an opportunity to be hired on as a full-time winemaker in this area. But I was just browsing winejobs.com one day and saw the post for a winemaker in Southeast Arizona. I'd actually been up working on a project for work, and it was about 10 p.m. And I knew that if I went to sleep, I wouldn't apply for the job. So I just stuck it out for a little bit longer, wrote a cover letter, updated my resume, and applied for it that night. And it was actually the day that it was posted that I applied, and had my first phone interview the next day. And it went on from there, and now I'm out here making wine.
An appropriately named winery, Aridus, because it is quite arid out there in the desert.
Yeah, it really is. In our region, we get 13 inches of rain per year, and it all pretty much arrives in the summer.
Yeah.
So.
Right about now.
Right about now, exactly. Yeah.
And there's no water source, so it's either rainwater or drip irrigation from a well.
Yeah. There is, in our vineyard, there's a seasonal creek that runs through. So in the summer, it will rise quite a bit, and there will be a fair amount of water coming down from the Chiricahua Mountains, which is, you know, our vineyard abuts those. But right now, we can't capture any of that water. So our water at the vineyard comes from a well.
It's fun and interesting to talk with you about this because I lived here for a long time, too, in Arizona, and I'm very familiar with the Chiricahuas and Cochise County, and I've even camped on the Turkey Creek, which you're referencing, before in the Chiricahua foothills. So I didn't see vineyards at that time 10 or more years ago, but it's certainly a pretty area.
Oh, yeah. I don't exactly know when the first vineyard went in that area, but... You know, even driving out there now, I was literally 2 weeks ago driving around trying to find one vineyard that I knew was out there, but I just couldn't find it anywhere. And then eventually there was a break in the mesquite trees and I could see vines like through the mesquite. I was like, oh my gosh. I would have never found this if I hadn't known to go looking for it. So there's really only one vineyard that you can see from 181, which is the highway that kind of runs past the Chiricahuas. But there are others out there. They're just, it's really hard to see them through the brush.
Tell us about the grapes that you're growing out in that region and the ones you source, because you work with other growers.
Sure. So at our estate vineyard, we have Sauvignon Blanc, Malvasia Bianca, and Viognier planted on our whites side. And we're currently putting in grapes on the red side. So last year, we put in Cab Sauv. This year, we just finished putting in Malbec and Syrah. We'll be putting in Cab Franc, Tempranillo, Petite Syrah, I believe a little bit of Merlot. And Graciano. I believe that's what we're putting. Yeah. We'll see. We're slated to put the rest in the ground next year, and hopefully it'll be our first year getting cab off our vineyard next year. From the area, we source Tempranillo and Syrah. We also source Graciano, a little bit of Viognier, some Grenache.
Mourvèdre,
yes. A fair amount of Mourvèdre. There's a huge diversity of grapes available.
All warm climate, though, that you're working with. But you said at the Napa Valley Wine Academy the other day during your seminar that you're still doing some trials to see what grows best out there.
Absolutely, yeah. I don't think anybody has really nailed down what they want to, you know, hang their hats on or make their flagship grape. A fair number of folks are really excited about Pique Poule Blanc, but you tend to see a fair number of Southern Rhone varieties, and Italian varieties are starting to catch on. So we'll see. It's an exciting time to be growing and making wine here.
I was looking up Malvasia, and it's not something you hear about too often, and I found out that it's used in Madeira wine.
Oh, yeah, Madeira's an interesting place. I couldn't quite speak to what they're doing there now, but yeah, the Malvasia, the Malmsey, wasn't the sweetest one.
But the one that you make, the one that you served at the seminar, the Malvasia Blanca, a sweeter dessert wine, was very nice.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I really like working with Malvasia because I like making it in all the different styles that you can. So we make a pet nat, so a lightly sparkling version. We make a dry version. We made that sweet version. And we even made a skin-fermented Malvasia last year, which we'll see how that does in the market. But yeah, I think it just produces an interesting wine every way that you make it.
talking earlier about the blend that you make, the Aridus Fuel Blend, I thought was fantastic. Tell us about that.
So that was made from grapes from our first vintage off our estate vineyard. So it was a blend of all of the whites. So a little bit of Viognier, a little bit of Sauv Blanc, a little bit of Malvasia. And we brought them all in slightly early so that we'd preserve the natural acidity in the grapes and also produce a wine with lower alcohol. We pressed them all together, fermented it all as one juice, and then after fermentation, we broke down the tank into a couple of smaller tanks. One of them got a little bit of oak contact, and the others we did some pretty aggressive lees stirring to kind of build up the mouthfeel and give it, you know, just a little more palate weight, just something more interesting going on. And we're really excited. It hasn't been released yet, but we're really excited to bring this to our customers because I think it's something that people in Arizona will really respond to. Yeah.
Was that tapping into your specialty winemaking skills at that point when you're doing some of these different versions of the different barrels?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was nice because it really gave me a chance to play around. We tend to release single variety wines at Aridus, so it was fun to do something that was a little bit different that we knew was going to be a blend right from the outset, and one that just let me play around with a couple of different techniques and see where it went. And I think it turned out pretty well.
Of the seven varieties you brought and the blend, the Syrah just was a standout. The other ones were very good, but the Syrah was spectacular.
I love the Syrah. That one is, oh my gosh, one of my favorites to make, and obviously one of my favorites to drink. We just get really nice tannins on that Syrah, in addition to just like lovely bright fruit notes. You know, with certain Syrahs from hot climates, you can tend to have like really, really plush, really soft tannins. But this one that we make, we manage to retain quite a bit of structure. So it's one that I find very pleasing to drink now, but I'm really excited to see how it continues to age in bottle and evolve. Yeah,
such depth of character that wine had. I really enjoyed it. How did Scott and Joan Dahmer, I kind of saw the story, but explain how they chose to move out there to open up the Aridus Wine Company.
Sure. So they, for many years, lived in the Healdsburg area and, you know, really loved visiting wineries in and about the Napa Valley, and had always kind of dreamed of opening a winery of their own. And then Joan, she's a doctor, she took a partnership down in the Phoenix area. So they moved down here and really, really missed being around so many wonderful wineries. And as they were looking around and trying to find that, they realized there was a community of wine growers here in this area. So they started looking around to find a piece of land, to find a winery space. And when they visited the Turkey Creek Vineyard, they knew it was the place. It was just... It was beautiful, the creek running through. They pulled soil samples and found, yes, this is a good place for growing wine grapes.
We were planning on going to your tasting room in Scottsdale last night, but it got too late, unfortunately. They stay open until 8, but yeah, it was like 7:40 when we were talking about it. Like, oh, it's getting a little too late now. But I want our listeners to know, if you do go to the Phoenix area, which is a little bit more direct flight from the Bay Area, you can stop into the Aridus tasting room in Scottsdale and try some of your wines without having to go all the way to Wilcox.
Yeah, I mean, Wilcox is quite a trek. So we have the tasting room up in Scottsdale. We do have one in Wilcox, so if people do want to make it down there, there's a tasting room there. but our Scottsdale tasting room is right in Old Town, and there are art galleries all around, so if you get bored of tasting wine, you can go and look at some art. But yeah, we love having people come in and try our wines, so yeah.
Well, Lisa, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you again, and thank you for coming over here to meet with us today, and it's fun to see you here in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time to chat today.
Kind of crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's wild. You know, the wine community is so small, though. Yeah.
Yes, it certainly is. That was a nice, relaxed conversation I had with winemaker Lisa Streed of Aridus Wine Company. I truly did enjoy her wine, and I'd say so far, they're leading the way in the Arizona wine industry. Take a look at the great variety of wine she makes on their website, AridusWineCo.com. The standouts are Malvasia Bianca, the Mourvedre, Syrah, and Vintner's Reserve Red Blend. You'll also see they've picked up awards from New York's Finger Lakes region to the Pacific Rim International Wine Competition, and their Merlot, Viognier, and Chardonnay won awards at last year's San Francisco Chronicle Competition. They're doing something right. Keep up the great work, Lisa. And owners, Scott and Joan Dahmer. Say, if you'd like to keep on top of what's happening in the wine industry, maybe hear some outtakes and learn about other wine topics that I don't cover on my show or podcast, I'd love to have you join my wine community on Patreon. Take a look and see if it's something that appeals to you. Patreon.com/onthewineroad. That's patreon.com/onthewineroad. Also, my past interviews, interesting wine trivia, and more are available at onthewineroad.com. Thanks for joining me today, and I'll see you out there on the wine road.